Film Nerds Unlimited. Lo-fi movie conversations with high-quality movie connoisseurs. Graham Flanagan of Business Insider. Ben Flanagan of AL.com.
Hey, Ben, how's it going?
Going great. What's up, Graham?
Well, we've both seen War for the Planet of the Apes, and I saw it in New York on Thursday night, and with a decent-sized crowd, and I saw it in 3D, which wasn't planned. They came in right before the screening and said, "Excuse me, ladies and gentlemen, due to technical difficulties, this screening has to be in 3D. Sure. So we were all kind of like, there was a murmur in the crowd, like, "Eh." But then actually I love the 3D experience, which is rare for a live action movie. So tell me about your viewing experience.
I went, as I want to do, in the middle of the day a movie I really want to see comes out, and my theater was probably about half full down here in Alabama, which is the way I like it. Minimal talking, less people, the more I can probably enjoy a brand new movie that I just really badly want to see. And this was probably at the top of my list of movies I wanted to see this summer.
Really?
Yeah, because Dawn of the Planet of the Apes was on my top 10 list of 2014. I thought I might like it because I really liked Rise of the Planet of the Apes. It caught me off guard that a reboot that had the word Rise in its title would be as good as it ended up being. I had no idea what I was going to get with Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, which I think is one of the best modern blockbusters there is. It's so old school to me in that I consider 90s blockbusters old school at this point, but it just gave me a similar feeling that I had coming of age as a moviegoer, where I love to go see, and I'll drop this name, movies like Jurassic Park, that gave me that sense of adventure and scale, special effects, and it showed me a director who had a pretty amazing handle on it, and it was a blockbuster that had so much more to say than just, here, you set pieces, have some fun. It was about war, it was about power and politics and violence, and I couldn't believe just how much depth a summer blockbuster that was in the middle of rebooting a franchise that people didn't really care about at that point. It just surprised me that a blockbuster could have as much depth as it did, even more. You could offer even more than just, here are a few set pieces, go have some fun with it and eat your popcorn. This movie had so much more to say in terms of being about politics and power and violence and war. There were just so many moving parts, and I think that Dawn of the Planet of the Apes also showed a director who is in full control over something that blended such amazing scale, and it did have those set pieces, but it did have that depth, and it just felt like a blockbuster that was pretty rare for the 2010s even, and it showed me that Matt Reeves has a bright future, but this franchise that I don't think many people cared about before Rise of the Planet of the Apes came out, it had so much potential, and it created what I think is one of, at this point, and after Warren, we can get into it, but I kind of felt this way during Dawn, it created this character Caesar, the second movie elevated the character Caesar to what I think is one of the best film characters of all time. So I loved Dawn, and that's why I was so pumped about this, and I couldn't wait to see how Matt Reeves had grown as a director, and we all know that he is now in charge of this Batman movie for DC and Warner Brothers, coming off a huge franchise. I wondered what that transition would be like, and I was more concerned about, let's see how War of the Planet of the Apes goes before we get into Batman stuff, but now that I've seen War of the Planet of the Apes, I can tell you that Batman's in some good-ass hands.
Oh, yeah. I mean, hopefully the actor cast as Batman can rise to the challenge here and be worthy of this guy, because this has been one of the best action trilogies, sci-fi fantasy trilogies, period, ever.
Ever, ever.
Yeah, it is. And it's amazing to see it's crazy to think about the type of movie that Rise of the Planet of the Apes is. You know, when you get to the end of War of the Planet of the Apes, the trilogy started out so subtly and so quietly, and it certainly boils over at the end of Rise, but man, just the patience that they had with this franchise in terms of that film, just to explain what happened at the very, very beginning. It's crazy to think about. And I fully agree with you on all those points, and especially Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. I didn't get a chance to see it again before I saw this, but it was still fresh in my mind even, what, 2-3 years ago. That was such an incredible cinematic experience, thinking to myself, like, wow, this is really the pinnacle of storytelling, of special effects on this scale. And this time, it tops Dawn of the Planet of the Apes to me. I was just blown away during War. I was saying wow and whoa and awesome over and over again. And I was just sitting there with my 3D glasses and eating Twizzlers, and just, it was like, you know, true happiness watching this movie. You know, I just want to say, like, of course, obviously in the title of the film, it's suggested that it's a war movie, but it's so many other things too. It's a Western, you know, when Caesar leaves to go and get vengeance on the colonel, and then he says his other three buddies roll up. That is a great moment, just straight out of a classic Western. It's just when the squad shows up and he's like, what are you doing here? And they all like give their reasons for being there. Man, what an incredible moment. And it's apes and gorillas and chimpanzees on horses riding up, and it's got the same impact of, you know, a Clint Eastwood or John Wayne movie. So that was just such an incredible moment. And then you get to the sort of compound where you've got sort of an Apocalypse Now vibe. You've got a Prison Break type film, and then you've got a full-on war film. It's just so many different elements here that were woven together seamlessly, just from a storytelling standpoint. But for me, what really kept blowing me away is an aesthetic aspect of the film, a technical aspect of the film, is the way that close-ups of these characters were lit and framed and composed that made it feel so real. I mean, Matt Reeves chose to go so extreme close up on these characters so often, and it works every time. And that to me was the aesthetic triumph of this movie that's sticking with me the most.
Yeah, and focusing on those aesthetic triumphs for a minute, I think at War of the Planet of the Apes, you're right. It's I think this is really a turning point for special effects, and really it's like it's taking like the Hollywood sort of nuclear weapons and using them for good, in that we hate the idea of reboots. You know, we hate the idea of too many special effects and an overdependence on special effects, but it's using those weapons as tools and it's using them for good.
Yeah, not crushes.
It's the best possible example of what a reboot can be, what a special effects-driven movie can be, because, look, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, for similar reasons, was just as a big a deal special effects-wise. I mean, another turning point for mocap, and Andy Serkis gave a phenomenal performance as an ape realized through special effects. This almost leaves Dawn of the Planet of the Apes from a special effects standpoint in the dust. Like, mm-hmm. I was watching some clips from Dawn of the Planet of the Apes recently, and it's still just wonderful and awesome, but if you just compare the visual texture of each of the apes, Caesar for that matter, I hate to limit it as much to say, like, excuse the term photoreal, but like this is the most like photoreal mocap in CG I've ever seen. It's amazing. You see every single little hair. You see every piece of dirt taped into their fur. And
yeah, the skin looks real. The skin.
Yeah. And more importantly, every emotional moment, glance, movement of the face is earned, and it's earned through the special effects, and obviously earned through the performance of Andy Serkis. And it's truly amazing. Like you said, there are some amazing close-ups. There's one moment in the movie when they're on the compound when this new character, Bad Ape, played by Steve Zahn, he has been underground and he comes up through a hole to see some of the other apes. And when his head comes up through the hole and they just hold him this close-up a couple of times, I was just like, is that real? Like, yeah. is this a real thing? Is this a real ape that they trained? Yeah. Like, are apes really talking now and we just don't know it? Like, I was that blown away by it.
Yeah. That shot, that's going to be a meme, just guaranteed. you know, like, it just has to be, you know, that's an iconic moment in the movie. That's what I saw it with a group of four other coworkers, and after it was over, everybody was arguing, that had to be prosthetics. That had to be prosthetics. I mean, when you've got a CGI making you say that, you know that something special just happened.
Yeah, and what's so great, too, about this and why it's such a big moment is even in Dawn, which is Caesar's movie, in like Caesar and Koba, for that matter, in all the rest of the apes, like, they're able to really further depend on the special effects and the performances of the actors playing the apes. It's even greater in this movie because, I mean, even in Dawn, they felt like they had to have this sort of cast of recognizable, humans and actors sort of like filling out a human class when you had people like Jason Clark and Kerry Russell and even like Cody Smith McPhee and blah, blah, blah. It's like they didn't really need that this time. Like, there are definitely human actors and human characters, but this movie, like, almost dominantly belongs to eight characters. They don't care. Matt Reeves cares more about Caesar and cares more about Maurice and Bad Ape and all of these amazing characters who are so humanized and so beautifully realized. You can't do the special effects in the actors, but that's what's so unique about this. It's like, they don't care about humans anymore. Like, we can do this. Yeah. We believe in it. And you buy the characters and you buy the story. Otherwise, it would just be a visual effects exercise. If the story wasn't there, then it wouldn't really matter because, I mean, it's just a pretty breathtaking conclusion to what I think is a really important film trilogy.
Okay, so, and Maurice, the character, is one of the most beautiful aspects of the entire film as well. It was interesting, one of my colleagues, he says, I don't understand why they didn't have more time with humans in this. And I'm just like, what, man? No. And he's like, oh, but I didn't see Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. I'm like, okay. you need to understand that, like, in Dawn, there is, like you just said, there's humans at the center of the story. But in this, it's like, it's going to be their planet soon. And we've shifted in terms of story, It's about these characters now, and I thought that was really I love that aspect of it. But man, the human character at the center of it was, I think, incredibly realized by Woody Harrelson, especially in that scene at the beginning, the waterfall and nighttime ambush. That shot when he turns around, especially in 3D, it was so badass. I mean, that was an incredible moment. You know, starting the origin of the vengeance that drives Caesar's journey. That was incredible. But I don't think you've really told me, Ben. I mean, did you have any issues with this movie?
Not really. I want to go back to the point you were making about Maurice. One of the biggest highs that I had from Dawn of the Planet of the Apes was like during the opening 10 minutes of the movie. And these movies open similarly, but obviously.
Yeah.
For different reasons, and at the beginning of that, there's this big like hunt that the apes are on, where they're hunting deer, and then there's this bear fight, and then they go back to their sort of commune, and there's a moment where Caesar and Maurice are speaking sign language to each other, like they're just like sitting by their cave at their home, and they're speaking. There's like this long like dialogue scene between two apes, and I just remember thinking, like, as I was watching it for the first time, like, am I really watching this right now? Like, am I so compelled by two computer-generated apes speaking sign language to each other? And, like, the characters are just so, like, interesting, and what they're saying is so interesting. There's such a deep philosophical resonance in this movie. And the movie in this one opens the same, and I was just like, oh my God, we're doing it again. And I'm like sitting here, and Caesar talking to Maurice, and they're just sort of laying out again sort of like the philosophical landscape of this movie and sort of what's going to drive it. And it's just, it's beautiful. Like, it's just beautiful storytelling. And I think, I wondered if this movie could, I wondered how the Planet of the Apes franchise could go on without Koba, because I thought Koba was such an important, like, just such an amazing character, like, in general. Yeah. He's one of the, like, my favorite movie characters of all time, and Toby Kebbell was so perfect in that role, and I just wondered, how's this going to survive without him? And without giving too much away, Koba's presence is still very much felt in War of the Planet of the Apes, but it still strives because it has brand new characters, which are so awesome, like the donkeys, right, that fight the apes that are sort of traitorous and were Koba followers who fight with the humans now against Caesar. There's one in particular who I believe his name is Luca, if I'm not mistaken, who is just such an awesome character and has such an amazing dynamic with Caesar, and they have so many awesome moments. And you talk about close-ups, man, the close-ups of Luca when he has his sort of like stare downs and moments with Caesar are awesome. Yeah. And then you have the winter gorilla ape during the first act of the movie, just such another awesome character. So it's riddled with really, really cool characters. And I mentioned Bad Ape earlier, but for that reason, like, I put Matt Reeves, somebody who is obviously an amazing action director, and I can't wait to see what he does next, because I put him on the level of, like, J.J. Abrams.
He's over J.J. Abrams.
Yeah, it's not a run.
He is. This is better. This is his, what he did here. I'm sorry. I love Force Awakens, but this is better. It's just superior Force Awakens. I mean, we'll see what happens with the rest of the trilogy. And I love Force Awakens, but I'm just saying, if you're going to put them head-to-head as filmmakers, you got to go with Matt Reeves. But
yeah. Well, and I was going to say, too, like, the opening or whatever reminds me of there are so many aspects of this that remind me of James Cameron, too. I mean, like, there are things about it that remind me of Aliens, like, particularly the look of the soldiers during the opening action sequence is
you said
really awesome.
You dropped that. You said there are things that remind you of Aliens.
Yeah, there are things that remind me of Aliens, like the look of the soldiers during the opening attack sequence and throughout. I mean, there are – the scale of this is so amazing that there's David Lean of – I've seen people pretty accurately reference Bridge on the River Kwai, where the Woody Harrelson character parallels the Japanese officers, his features Alec Guinness in the prison camp setting during wartime. So this movie's making very specific references, but again, it's earning everything, and it has its own depth, it has its own characters, it's telling its own story while paying respect to the movies that set up blockbusters like this. So Matt Reeves, he's on another level right now, and he's a guy we can, I think at this point, we can kind of trust with anything after these two six movies.
Yeah, I kind of wish he would jump on the Star Wars train, you know? give him the final episode of the trilogy.
Yeah.
But in terms of issues, like, there's really only one thing that stood out to me where I kind of scratched my head, but it's not really an issue, and that was the sort of the length of Woody Harrelson's monologue scene. Exposition scene. I have to think that was at least 12 to 14 minutes. Everything in the scene mattered, and there was a motivation to it. But and it definitely helped to show who he was and why he was doing what he was doing. But it felt like long, sort of just like expository, sort of like a Bond villain just going on and on and on.
Yeah, it was monologuing.
Yeah, exactly. And as this movie had sort of, just kept feeling fresh and staying away from tropes for that scene, it seems sort of kind of thrown in there. But again, everything he says in that scene matters and contributes to the story and to the character. So I give this movie like four stars out of four. I mean, I love it. It's one of the best movies of the year. It might be the best movie of the year. Yeah, man, I want to see it again, man. And just seeing it in the theater, 3D was great. Honestly, I'm not a 3D person, but it was, if you're so inclined, or the timing works out, just do it. The 3D aspects of this movie were really fun.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you in terms of the monologuing scene. You're right, it did go on a while. And I thought the little thing, the wrench they threw into the whole virus and the mutation that it had, I thought that was a little silly, you know? And I'm talking as if a movie about talking apes fighting humans isn't a little silly, but I thought that was a little silly even for this universe that they've laid out there, but it didn't bug me. And you know, there were times where I thought, like, is Woody Harrelson as big a badass as his off-screen persona is right now? And I think that there are enough moments in the movie that managed to earn that. He's also just, like, a very sad person, too. Like, yeah. He has this weird, like, feigned God complex that is clearly empty, and the way that plays out is just really sad in terms of what motivates him. Very sad. So, yeah, I mean, those would probably be my only real issues. And I think while I'm talking about it, I think the Luca character is the gorilla the silverback gorilla that's on Caesar's side. And I can't remember the exact name of the traitor gorilla, the donkey gorilla. But, wow, what an amazing moment he had later in the movie. Yeah. But one of my favorite scenes in the movie, too, involves Luca in his interaction with a little girl. In the movie, it's just such a, like, it's just a moment that has you kind of tearing up for one reason early and then and for another reason a little later. So, yeah, I mean, it's like, it's just amazing that these special effects people at WIDA and Matt Reeves and everybody who worked on this and the actors can have you caring so much about these non-existent things, you know, like it's animated, but it's animation, you know, like, you have to look at it the same way you would 2D animation. And if you care about Simba and the Lion King, or if you care about, you know, Bagheera in the Jungle Book, you do sort of for the same reasons here in the Planet of the Apes movie. So these are just artists doing what they do and telling stories in just an ultimately compelling way. So to me, like, the real strength of these movies, the special effects are great, the action is really good, but the real strength of these movies, again, is that philosophical depth, the thematic weight that they all have, and what they have to say about war and violence and politics and religion, for that matter, in this, because you see Caesar goes from sort of an Abraham Lincoln figure to Moses in War of the Planet of the Apes. And it's just amazing to see this. Again, I think he's one of the greatest characters of all time. I really do. And it's one of the most, it's so cool to see how respected a character is in these, especially these last two movies, and how he earns the respect of the audience, too. And it's just a real triumph on the part of everybody.
Yeah. Well, in conclusion, I just want to say, your move, Star Wars.
Film Nerds Unlimited, go to filmnerds.com or find us on Facebook and Twitter. If you like what you hear, rate and review our podcast on iTunes. Keep an eye out for the next issue of Film Nerds Unlimited, coming soon.